Hey, everybody, welcome to another great podcast of the OIG Roundtable. OIG Roundtable, a little bit different today. Got a special guest. Of course, I have Matt Kachansky, one of our retired senior leaders from HHS OIG and the former or retired director of the UPIC Northeast. Jason Eisengrein, another one of the retired senior leaders from HHS OIG and the retired Western UPIC director. I almost said former. And you know, when I say former, it always implies something nefarious. Wade is out on a special project today, and we've got as our special guest, Sean Weiss. He's a vice president partner at Doctors Management, great friend. We do a lot of work with Doctors Management, advise and Doctors Management have a lot of business relationships. We do a ton of work together. Sean, as I always say, can quote the PIM, Program Integrity Manual, like scripture. But he is one of the leading authorities in the compliance space. And Sean, I know you've been on a couple of times. We wanted to have you back on because we wanted to talk about an ongoing topic that we've been talking about on our podcasts here, and that is the TPE, targeted probe and education, and payment suspensions and RAC referrals and all of that. So some of our podcast listeners, some of yours, know what TPE is because I know you talk about it on your podcast. We talk a lot about it, but you know, generally speaking, it is a CMS initiative. For those of you that don't follow it in granularity, it is a CMS initiated project in which the MACs do probe claim reviews, three rounds of TPE. Now, according to the PIM, a probe sample is anywhere between 20 and 40 claims. You'll find that in chapter 3. I'm trying to emulate you, Sean. So I'm trying to reference the PIM when I can. Chapter 3 of the Program Integrity Manual talks about probe and statistical sampling. Within chapter 3, it talks about probe sampling of being 20 to 40 claims. In a TPE, providers are given an opportunity to have three rounds of TPE. So the provider gets a request from the MAC for records. Those records are reviewed. An error rate is identified. The provider gets one-on-one education, basically how to fix their problems. In the words of Jason Eisengrein, it's to fix it's an antisocial behavior modification tool, right? It's a way to educate a provider to get them to fix their problems so that they get paid appropriately for the work that they're doing based upon their documentation. Providers are given three opportunities. And after the third opportunity, if they continue to fail TPE through what is known as a high error rate. And I'm going to use high error rate in quotes because it's really not well defined. It doesn't really say what a high error rate is. Typically speaking, I think we all agree that if you look at other things, documentation typically suggests that a high error rate is something over 50%. Anything under 50% is typically not considered a high error rate unless you're talking about corporate integrity agreements and the fact that an error rate of anything over zero is a reportable. But for the purposes of TPE and prepayment and the things of that sort, we're talking about error rates over 50. The point being, after three rounds of TPE, if the provider continues to have a high error rate, that provider could then be referred to, among other things, typically it's the RAC, the recovery audit contractor, for further action, which could be a statistically valid random sample with extrapolation and an attempt to recover that money. Now, there should be obviously a symbiotic working relationship between all of the parties, the MACs, the UPICs, the RACs, all of that. So Sean, I want to go to you because the reason that we got to the point where we are is because you had a very interesting scenario that transpired involving a TPE. So let's talk a little historically about the practice, how the practice operates, and then, you know, let's kind of take it from there.
Yeah, so first, foremost, it's always great to be back on the program with you guys. I love getting this opportunity because I learned so much from Jason and Matt. And, you know, I get an opportunity to collaborate a lot with Matt every once in a while with Jason. But Matt usually hears from me when I have these really funky situations going on with the Office of Inspector General or with a Unified Program Integrity Contractor. And this one was really interesting. And as you talked about, right, you know, targeted probe and educate, that's Medicare's idea of a good time on a Friday night. You know, first they target you, then they probe you, and then they educate you about what they've done to you. And, you know, we have a couple of scenarios. And the first one that you're referring to is a large orthopedic group that engages with me on a regular basis, and we provide a lot of their compliance services for them. And as part of that, we've created a living, breathing document, specifically that we are able to do our own data mining, right? We use a program called Compliance Risk Analyzer, CRA, and we look for, you know, low, medium, and high risks based on algorithms that have been created that we believe would emulate what's being used by the federal government and or their contractors to identify high risk claims for audit. As part of that, you know, we go through the whole process of identifying the claims, auditing the claims, and where necessary, we create corrective action plans if we find a problem, and we issue voluntary refunds in accordance with the MMA and or the Affordable Care Act and the MMA 6405 of the act for the voluntary refund process, or what most people call the 60-day rule. So this practice, you know, we felt really good about the fact that we got a TPE letter indicating that they wanted to take a look at several of our providers for hyaluron injections, in addition to evaluation and management services. Obviously, we, you know, because it is a prepayment review, there are no extensions. And I think that's something that your listeners who are not aware of that need to understand. A TPE is a prepayment review process where they will target claims as they are being submitted. This is not a post-payment review where you could say, well, we need some extra time to be able to get our stuff together and get it to you. No, you have 45 days because this is a prepayment review. You submit everything, and then the nurse reviewer or reviewers, depending on how large the sample is, go through it, and then they get back to you and they say, you know, here's our findings. You know, we're offering you an opportunity to have an education session. We'll tell you why we, you know, found the issues that we found, you know, what we would recommend for corrective action, and then we'll talk about round two or round three, depending on when the client gets us involved. And in this scenario, we were involved out of the gate. And I always tell people it's so important to get folks like you guys or us involved out of the gate, because getting us involved in the back end, the legwork is even harder to try to unravel a mess, right? We want to get it up front, and we want to be part of the solution out of the gate to keep this thing as simplistic as possible. Long story short, we submitted everything. We got a letter back from the nurse reviewer saying, we've determined that there is a 0% error rate. We appreciate the opportunity to engage in the process. Whatever y'all are doing, keep going that route. And that was the end of it. And we thought everything was good. And then a short while later, I can't tell you how far down the road it was, but a short while later, we got a letter from the Unified Program Integrity Contractor indicating that they were opening a claim to review a number of dates of service. And when we looked at it, they were for the exact same dates of service, the exact same claims that we had already gone through the TPE process for. And we sort of responded to them and saying, hey guys, what are you doing? So I'll pause there.
Yeah. So, you know, the first piece of this that, you know, that you say is something that we drive home all the time, which is stay in the driver's seat for as long as you can, right? If you jump on these things right out of the gate, you're in the driver's seat. Like you can't reach out to us when it's day 44 and say, how can you help us? You gotta do this early on in the process. So, but it does beg the question of, you had a TPE with a zero error rate, which is probably in the minority of things, right? I mean, we know that in the E&M world, the last set of data showed, you know, I think error rates in the E&M world are in the 42% range. And nationally, error rates hover around 10% across all, at least I think on the CERT audits that were done most recently. So you've got these big swings. You have a 0% error rate because look, I know you a long time, and you wield a hefty compliance bat. You know, you have a Lucille bat, right? And it's, but from the compliance perspective, that's what gets you that 0% error rate, right? You're ensuring that you're, exactly, you're ensuring that the claims that are being submitted by your practices that you're the compliance officer for have your sign off. And I know that you're not like, it's just kind of the way you do business. But obviously the challenge then becomes that now you've got the UPIC getting involved in something. And now there's clearly no coordination. The MAC didn't coordinate with the UPIC. Like there's no one that's been coordinating. So I want to go to Jason because, you know, one of the things that we always talk about on our podcast is resource allocation, the scarcity of resources, coordination of effort, and all of these things. And ultimately what it comes down to is, and Jason loves to talk about this, and I say this like, you know, it's almost like Dr. Evil, $1 billion. He hates to talk about it because it's always return on investment. You know, when you're in an SIU space, when you're in the government space, even in the practice space where we play and where you are, Sean, it's return on investment. You're spending all of this money to do the same thing two and three times. So Jason, I want to turn to you because I know how much you love talking about ROI.
Well, performance measurement is important, right? Because what the effectiveness of an organization or a contract is really important. And certainly CMS is charged with spending taxpayers' dollars that they're spending on program integrity efforts in an effective manner. So it doesn't sound from the case example that Sean's presenting that would fall in the realm of that there'd be a chance for a return on investment or a good chance for return on investment. So it does beg the question of why. And not suggesting that you'd necessarily be able to get the answer, because it could be a law enforcement referral. It could be that that provider, and it might be erroneous, popped up on an algorithm once again. And, you know, but I would say that the communication, and maybe this is pie in the sky, I like to think that, and I've said this on other podcasts, I took all calls from providers and everything. If somebody wanted to speak to the program director, I made it a point to get back to them. And, you know, generally, I wasn't the best person for them to speak to because I, you know, I'm not a data scientist where I could explain the 95th percentile of a two-sided confidence level, and I know I'm getting it wrong, you know, but ultimately I would be interested as the program director as to, you know, making sure that we're spending the limited resources in an effective and efficient manner. So it really would be interesting to know what sparked that. The other thing is that, you know, I always like to say that program integrity, it's just like in the law enforcement days, there's a force continuum. You know, someplace when there's just some concern, you know, it could be handled through communication, could be handled through a TPE. The E part of that is the communication part that I was referring to. So, you know, there are ways of getting things fleshed out maybe earlier before that process. And I know that there's concern about opening, like reopening the claim when there's a zero, there was a 0% error rate. For all the more reason, that's what makes me want to, that old-time investigator part of me, I really want to know why that was. Because as a program director, I wouldn't have wanted my people focusing on something that was already 0%. And so just sticking for 1 minute on that return on investment, I do totally agree that there should be much more specificity put to the test of contractors to identify the metrics that are important and then being able to measure them. So, you know, I think there's, you know, definitely room for improvement. And I think that might add a little bit more clarity. But if it was something in the area of law enforcement interest or an algorithm that the provider popped up on, I can't imagine why anyone was opening, you know, reopening an issue that you're presenting, Sean. It's very perplexing to me.
Yeah. So I think, you know, Sean, the takeaway from that is, you know, access to the UPIC directors. You know, I mean, I know Matt will say this, that if people called him, he answered the phone also. He might have pretended he was Jason, but he still may have answered the phone nonetheless. But, you know, and that may be an avenue to pursue if this is still an ongoing thing. And Jason, I think, is, you know, the one that Jason's right, is that if there is a law enforcement request or something, you know, that could be something that could kind of muddy the waters. But, you know, I would say from an investigator's perspective, if I'm an agent working on this, I'm going to know that the MAC has done a TPE and the error rate was zero. Now, is the reason that the error rate is zero because at the end of the day, does somebody at the MAC believe that those records have some other problem, right? Do they think that they're cloned records? If they think they're cloned records, well, there's a CMS policy on cloning of records, so they would have gotten dinged on that. Do they think that there's something within those records that while it gave the auditor no reason to deny the claim, there was something else, right? We know the MACs aren't out there doing an investigation. So it's not like they're reaching out to beneficiaries. It's not like they're doing these intense. TPE is really the four corners, right? You're in their lane. So the question becomes, if law enforcement is involved, is there some sort of third party thing that's out there that led to that, in which a UPIC program director is not going to tell you that? But, you know, so Matt, I want to go to you because now, you know, a piece of this then becomes, you know, that interplay. And in this case, we only know the facts we've got. But, you know, clearly this says to me, and when Sean told me the story initially, I was like, this makes no sense. Like, I said to Sean, the exact same claims, the exact same time period. And he said, yes. So that gets to the whole point. I know you and I kind of talked about this, is this whole premise of coordination of effort. This, and I know we talk about the MCC all the time, the major case coordination, but this isn't even like an MCC thing. This is just sort of the common sense kind of conversation.
Right. And absent this, you know, this variable that we don't know about, this shouldn't happen. It basically shouldn't happen. You know, our contracts with CMS as in the UPICs, we are obligated to create, you know, memorandums of understanding with each of the MACs where there is an exchange of information, where every month and then during the pandemic, even more frequently, we would send the MAC a list of our case leads and they would come back and say, oh yeah, we've got an open TPE on this. What do you want us to do? Close it, continue it, and you guys wait. What do you want to do? And also, anytime we'd open a lead, our first step would be to contact the MAC to see if there's a history of program integrity issues with that provider. So in this instance, we should have gotten that letter that says 0% error rate. So it never should have been opened beyond the lead. So I'm thinking from 30,000 feet and from, you know, a year in the past, mm-hmm. you know, maybe their data team saw the same algorithms, you know, the same types of the injections and the ENMs and all of the stage four popped an algorithm and said, oh, well, let's open a lead on this. It never should have gotten beyond that. Unless there's this other right. thing going on. Did someone from the provider come forward and say, hey, we all got together and had a charting party, for the TPE, and I know that's not going to happen with Sean as the compliance officer there, but other than something like that, I don't know why this would happen unless there was just a complete collapse of the communication between the two entities.
And so, Sean, has there been you've turned over the records to the UPIC at this point, right? And has there been any communication back?
So we've heard nothing at this point, and I think you guys know how I operate. Once everything is submitted, I don't press. I allow them to take their time, work through it. In another matter that was very similar, Matt, I think you were involved with this as well. The UPIC came back, issued a demand for $1.2 million. Yeah. We went back to them and said, guys, come on, you missed the boat. We had an education session with them not an education session. We had a informal settlement conference, if it is what I would refer to it as. And within probably 5 days, we received a letter that they were rescinding the $1.2 million demand against our client because what we had submitted as evidence to demonstrate compliance and that things were done correctly was enough to satisfy the UPIC and to say, hey, you know what? People make mistakes. We're human. We're fixing it. We're moving forward. But, you know, I do want to say one thing. And as much as I love people listening to my podcast, it's so critical for people to understand I don't do other podcasts except this one. And it's not because of our friendship. It's because of the knowledge base that exists with Jason, Eric, and Matt. I talk about all the time creating a circle of trusted resources. And these are three of the top trusted resources in my circle. You can't get any better than special agents within HHS OIG, you know, supervisors at, you know, OIG, the heads of the Unified Program Integrity Contractors in the Midwest and in the Northeast. This is why I engage so often with you guys on the record, off the record, emails, phone calls, things of that nature, because the ability to collaborate with you guys, to talk through things, to think things through, and then to know that I have you as resources when I have to get on the phone with the Office of the Inspector General, with OSIG, or, you know, with IA, or I need to get on, you know, with a UPIC, to have you guys in my corner, that's what every single law firm, that's what every single consultant, that's what every single practice should be striving for, is to find groups like you guys and keep them on a freaking retainer, man, seriously, because it's invaluable. People don't understand the benefit that I have. And when, you know, I know we're supposed to be talking about TPEs and everything, but I wanted to take a minute just to, you know, to share with you how much I appreciate the three of you guys. You can't buy the knowledge that is on this podcast today. You just can't. And, you know, that's when people say to me, how do you have a 98% success rate in, you know, cases that you're working on? It's because I have these guys working side by side with me. And that's what, like, you know, like I said, every law firm, every consultant, every physician practice, hospital, health system going through a government investigation or an audit, they should be engaging with you guys.
No, I appreciate that, Sean. And you know, that it works both ways. And that's right. The importance is having a good quality team of people to be able to work through these things. I mean, it sounds to me like, if we get back to this whole issue you've got going on, it sounds to me that if this does go away, it may be worth a Freedom of Information Act request, a FOIA request, to find out, like, because if you've done nothing wrong and you've passed muster the first way, you know, why are you being looked at the second, you know, on the second bite of the apple? And, you know, I mean, you know, generally speaking, I think the thing that we all agree is you shouldn't have to, you know, there shouldn't have to be two bites of the apple, right? It's just one bite of the apple. If you pass the TPE, but there was an error in the way the TPE analysis was done by the MAC, that's not a Sean Weiss problem. That's not your practice's problem. You don't get to reopen the books because of an accounting error that was done 8 years ago. The IRS doesn't come back and say, hey, sorry, our bad. You know, I mean, it shouldn't be that way.
In the past, and I think you guys all would agree, you know, when an administrative proceeding took place against a provider and the case was closed, it stayed closed because there was no grounds for reopening. But, you know, prior to, you know, and I knew we were going to kind of go through some of this, and, you know, there are terms that are used by the government when they decide to take another bite at the apple, right? And they use a term called reopening, and they use terms called good cause. And under the Federal Code of Regulations, and I won't start spouting off numbers, the UPICs actually have the right to reopen and conduct a post-payment review within 12 months of that initial or review determination. And under, you know, the Code of Federal Regulations, the UPIC does not need to establish good cause. And that's what's so amazing to me. They have the right to reinitiate this, and they do not have to demonstrate good cause. Now, if they go beyond 12 months, but within that four-year look-back period, then they have to be able to give the date for that, because, you know, that's when they have to be able to demonstrate the good cause for doing that. But within 12 months, and I, my client was so irate, and they're like, how is this happening? What are you going to do about it? And I'm like, I'm going to call Matt Kachansky and Eric. What do you mean, what am I going to do about it? It was a very frustrating thing to go through.
So in our discussion just before getting on the podcast, and we were shooting the breeze about these subjects, and Sean, you are like the best at being able to, you know, verbatim cite the CFR and PIMP sections, which is great. And, you know, when we talked about this, that's why I brought up the law enforcement part of this, because it doesn't make fiduciary sense in doing that. So I feel like, and it could have been any number of things, as Eric was oblique in saying that, you know, maybe there's a third party thing. Like, you know, until you really know, like, all, when if you were to do a link analysis of the provider and all of the provider's contacts, it could be any number of things that pop that back up above the surface. And so I see the value in having to show the reason for good cause. But, you know, coming from the law enforcement aspect of it, I would say that, you know, there's going to be that need for that not being revealed. So I'm not so sure that it's going to be a perfect situation, even if it was amended. But the thing that I said earlier in our pre-conversation, which I would encourage, is that where where one sees a less effective approach to spending the taxpayers' hard-earned dollars on program integrity efforts that seem kind of out of place when it's a 0% error rate, is the OIG's Office of Evaluations and Inspection. They're fully charged with reviewing programs within HHS, of which there are more than 300, and making sure that they're spending the money effectively and efficiently. And I think these are good things that OEI would be interested in.
Yeah. CMS is always listed as a high risk program for OEI, so they are focused on them.
Yeah, that exactly what I was gonna say is that, you know, part of the OIG's job is to be the watchdog of the entirety of HHS. CMS happens to be one of those programs, but, you know, we know CMS is also, you know, Medicare is the largest entitlement. The HHS budget is sometimes the largest, depending upon defense, but it's one of the largest line items. And so you can see that. Sean, look, we're running out of time, but I'm going to leave it at this. I'm going to say that I think if I'm looking at this from our side, my concern would be that there is somebody inside the company who is concerned that there's something going on. And the fact that TPE resulted in a zero error rate, which is like almost unheard of. And I know when you and I spoke about this and I said to you, well, what was your error rate? And you said zero. I was like, come on, seriously? Like, I mean, a broken clock is right twice a day. There's got to be something. And, you know, and I get it. And honestly, I would say for anybody else on the planet who told me that, I wouldn't believe them. But I know you and we've worked together and I know how you operate. And so it doesn't surprise me. I think to anybody who isn't in kind of intrinsically working with you and with the compliance team that you've got of people with you, and I know all of them well, I would say that there's probably a question there. But I have to think in the deepest bowels of this that somebody saw that there was a zero error rate and said, no way, and is raising up a stink somehow. And whether that stink is going back and making a complaint to the OIG hotline, and the OIG is referring it to the UPIC, which often occurs through a variety of reasons, lack of resources to work on something, wanting to develop a case beforehand. It went to the UPIC because the fact that it's so specific to the exact same claims, that cannot be coincidence. It just cannot be coincidence. So there may be more to it. We may be having a follow-up conversation about this in a few months.
Listen, I agree with you wholeheartedly, because one of the things that came to mind was, could there be a whistleblower within the organization that is looking at it and they're not satisfied and they're saying, well, you know, the people who looked at it really aren't investigators. They're clinicians, you know, nurses looking at it to determine X, Y, or Z. But, you know, we have banged our heads against the wall. And here's the good news. We dot the I's, we cross the T's. We have a culture of compliance from the top of the organization, from the CEO all the way down to the janitor and the vendors. You know, I mean, we have a vendor validation program. That's how far I take our compliance programs for our clients. I mean, we don't allow them to engage with a distributor or a vendor, no matter, especially when they're handing them, you know, a letter on CMS letterhead that says HCPCS code approved, and they're trying to tell them, you can bill for this. That my clients have learned some very hard lessons going through some prior things that I won't even get into now because of pending litigation. But we've had those thoughts. And look, if something comes about, you'll be the first to hear, because I'll be relying on your team to engage and make sure that we quash this thing as quickly as possible. So,
yeah. Well, we look forward to hearing more about, you know, what happens or what doesn't happen, as the case may be. So, Sean, as always, great having you. The time tends to go very quickly. Matt and Jason, always appreciate having you guys on. Today, I really appreciated Jason's ghost-like appearance because his background green screen kept flickering out. So I like the fact that, you know, a lot of people don't realize it, but Jason is actually a clone of himself. He's actually currently on the Amalfi Coast having a vacation, and this is his clone of himself, which is why you sometimes, you know, see him popping in and out. So
a hologram.
Think of a Star Wars movie. You know, it's
yeah. You are the Obi-Wan. That is true.
I was gonna say, where Obi-Wan Kenobi keeps kind of.
It is
with
it
his
is
lightsaber.
I know, that's right. But that's okay.
When I was a young agent, I would also be called Young Jedi Walker. So that is true. So listen, always great having you guys on, Sean. It's always great catching up with you on these. These are interesting topics for people who find this stuff interesting, right? So another great week. Look forward to the next time we can get together on another one of our podcasts. Again, as always, if you're not getting our newsletter, please shoot us an email, hello@advizehealth.com. You can catch that each week. You can catch our podcast through the newsletter. You can also get them on Spotify, get them on YouTube and the like. So we'll see you next week on the next podcast. And we'll see you on future LinkedIn Lives coming up. We've got a great summer of LinkedIn Lives also scheduled. So we'll see you on those. Take care, everybody.
Thank you all.